Having been tempted by Satan, Eve, in John Milton's epic poem Paradise Lost, ponders, "Here grows the cure of all, this fruit divine, fair to the eye, inviting to the taste, a virtue to make wise. What hinders then to reach and feed at once both body and mind?" So saying, her rash hand in evil hour, forth reaching to the fruit, she plucked, she ate. Earth felt the wound, and nature from her seat, sighing through all her works, gave signs of woe that all was lost. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. In his introductory lecture at this year's Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, Wyoming Catholic College President Dr. Glenn Arbery used Milton's account of the fall of Adam and Eve to set the tone and the topic for the week, Returning from Exile. The fall, Dr. Arbery argued, is the primal exile, and Milton's account, while expanding the biblical narrative in Genesis, sets the scene for that sense of exile and alienation we all feel in a world shattered by sin. Dr. Arbery, in your introduction to the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought with the theme of return from exile, you began by talking about John Milton's version of the fall of Adam and Eve in Paradise Lost, and you called it the primal exile. How is it the primal exile, and how does Milton talk about that?
It's the primal exile most of all because it's the first. It's our original parents. And so when they fell and were exiled from Eden, that's what I meant. It was the moment when man turned away from his first bliss in Eden and entered into the world as we know it, which is full of sin and full of hardship. So it's that first movement away from paradise that I was really thinking of when I said that.
Mm-hmm. So it's the exile that precipitated all the other exiles and all the other alienation.
And it's sort of the condition of man. It's a condition of being held back from the bliss that you feel like ought to be your own. We always feel that. We always feel like we ought to be happier than we are, or ought to have a prettier place to live or something. But it's that sense of having lost the original good that I think is our condition.
And how does the issue of freedom contribute to our understanding of the story in Milton and in the scriptures?
Milton emphasizes freedom, it seems to me, considerably more than the scriptures emphasize freedom. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, unless it has something to do with Milton's own political background. He was a Puritan, obviously feeling the impact in his early years of the Church of England and what was required of believers in terms of worship. He was a big advocate of freedom of conscience. And when he has God speak to the Son in Book 3 of Paradise Lost, it's all about freedom. And it's puzzling because at that moment, God is watching Satan approach paradise. He says that Satan is going to tempt man, and man is going to fall, and yet that is exactly what God needed to do. In other words, he had to make him free to fall. As he puts it, man will fall, he and his faithless progeny. I'm just reading a bit here. Whose fault? Whose but his own? Ingrate, he had of me all he could have. I made him just and right, sufficient to have stood, though free to fall. And then he adds something that seems to me crucial to everything we understand about the poem. He says, "Such I created all the ethereal powers and spirits, both them who stood and them who failed. Freely they stood, and fell who fell." And this seems to me crucial. Not free, what proof could they have given sincere of true allegiance, constant faith, or love, where only what they needs must do appeared, not what they would? So that's the key point for Milton. If you can't freely choose to obey God and to serve him, then there's no merit in it. So that's what God has to allow to Adam and Eve, even though he has to also foresee their fall, because without freedom, it would mean nothing for them to obey.
Siri in your iPhone doesn't love you and doesn't obey you. That's
so true. Siri doesn't understand my Southern accent at all. So
Now, you contrasted Adam's words of warning to Eve. Eve wants to go over and work on her own. You contrasted his words of warning to Eve with Satan's temptation of Eve. How does imagination enter into what's going on there and the differences?
What I argued when I gave this talk is that Adam's persuasion of Eve is less effective than Satan's, which I guess is obviously the case since we know that Eve listened to the serpent and ended up falling. And what I suggested was that Adam makes a reasonable argument to Eve about how she could be tricked by Satan's use of some specious object, as he puts it. He could take over and make something appear reasonable when in fact he was actually using an appearance of good that wasn't actually good. But he doesn't give any examples. Maybe he can't think of any examples. He doesn't have any to draw on from his experience. But something that appealed to the imagination of Eve might be more effective. Satan, by contrast, immediately appeals to her imagination. He comes to her in the form of the serpent, noble in those days, right before the fall, before he is crawling on his belly, and makes this argument to her, which already has the kind of ethos going for him. How does a serpent speak anyway, much less speak in such flattering terms? But he makes her imagine herself higher than she is. He does everything he can to work on the way that she sees herself. And I think that's probably where Adam failed to see where the imagination might be more effective.
Well, as a result of the fall, you said that something ugly happens to freedom. What ugly thing happens to freedom?
Well, what we see is that when Eve goes back to present her fallen self to Adam, Adam has to choose between Eve and his obedience to God. And he's pretty quick to choose. He can't imagine living now without Eve. So his freedom is already compromised, you could say. He's already free to choose God and abandon Eve, but that's already an ugly choice. He would have to leave what he really loves on a daily basis for the love of God, which is already seems estranged from him, I think, with Eve's fall. I think also that our choices don't get to be as perfectly free as they are when Eve is tempted by Satan. So, I mean, that's basically the direction things take. It's always now a choice between less harsh things, sometimes it seems, rather than the pure good and the choice of evil.
We're always choosing the lesser of two evils.
I'm not sure that that's always the case, but it's certainly something that enters into freedom that wasn't there before the fall.
Now, the angel Raphael warns Adam about loving Eve too much. Is he set up for the fall ahead of time? I mean, we think of the fall as the eating the apple and disobeying God, but this wasn't a snap decision. It seems that things were progressing this way, at least in Milton.
In Milton, right. I mean, however you present it, you have to end up with the same result, which is that Adam and Eve fall. So Milton is giving his best shot at how that might look. And of course, you can always pick holes in it. But it's important to remember that God already foresees the fall of Adam and Eve before Satan ever reaches paradise to tempt them. He sends Raphael, and this is pretty explicit in the poem, to warn them so that they won't have any excuse when they go ahead and fall. But Adam is pretty frank with Raphael. He tells him that he's attracted to Eve in ways that he can't quite explain. He feels commotion strange when he's around her. Her beauty overwhelms him. He knows that he should reason about these matters, but somehow it doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So whether there's a flaw in the mechanism, a factory defect, however you want to think about this, Adam's weakness seems to be love. And that's more forgivable than other kinds of faults. But passion is what Raphael warns him against. Adam's passion for Eve is clearly what underlies his own fall, rather than his desire to be like gods or something, which seems to be more Eve's motivation.
And then that love for Eve is then tainted after the fall.
Almost immediately. They begin to look at each other lustfully, and then from there on it's recriminations and doubts and thoughts of suicide and so on. So it's immediately they plunge into what the rest of us experience without grace, and that's where they are.
Does something all ugly also happen to our imaginations as a result of the fall?
That's an interesting question. I certainly know that we have to imagine what evil looks like. We have to be aware of the forms of seeming good that it might take. And Milton begins the poem by showing us hell. We start in book one with Satan and the other fallen angels awakening in hell. So the imagination, the fallen imagination, has to go there, has to start there somehow in the way that Milton pictures the arc of his poem. We come to paradise after we've already seen hell, which gives us a contrast that makes us admire it more, but also gives us a perspective on our own imaginations that is already shot through with irony. We look at Eden ironically. So the ironic imagination is one thing that certainly happens, mm-hmm. that we have to work with.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome.
This summer, the After Dinner Scholar podcasts will feature professors and presentations from the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought that happened this past June 11th through 15th. And so we'll move from the fall of Adam and Eve to the Exodus, to the New England Puritans, to Plato, Dante, Shakespeare, and our present postmodern exile. In addition to the After Dinner Scholar interviews, you will also find the lectures in their entirety posted as podcasts. And while it won't be quite the same as attending the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, something you may want to do next summer, you'll get a taste of the intellectual feast the participants enjoyed. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.